Learning and playing music more than almost any other activity strengthens and preserves brain function. Moreover, the brain of a musician is markedly different from that of a non-musician. In a free multimedia presentation on Wednesday night, tomorrow night, March 20th at 7 p.m. at the Guilderland Public Library, UAlbany neuroscientist Dr. Ewan McNay also conducts research in his brain scanning lab, discusses just how and why this happens, and explains how continuing to make music helps keep your brain young. The program is entitled Music and the Mind, the Lifelong Benefits of Music for the Brain. The event is co-sponsored by the Bach Cello Suites Workshop. And this morning, we are joined by Dr. McNay, as well as Margaret Lanoux, who is Vice President of the Bach Cello Suites Workshop. And it's a wonderful pleasure to have you both here. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having us.
All right. So, Margaret, let us begin with you of how and why you thought this was an important thing to do.
This was something that I had been thinking about since reading a book called Why We Sleep. And in this book, there was one little section that talked about how overnight the brain somehow corrects mistakes that you've been making. And so I started talking with some of our cellists about wanting to have somebody come and talk about this. And I got very lucky on my first try. I contacted University at Albany. I looked at their website, and Ewan McNay's name came up first thing, and it turns out that he's been thinking about this quite a bit already, and is doing research on it. So we asked him to come and talk to our group in the summer when we have our workshop, and we thought that other people ought to have a chance to hear this too. So we work with Guilderland Public Library, from which I retired last summer.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Matthew Walker is the author of Why We Sleep.
And that's
a
right.
Fascinating book. We had him on when the book came out.
I heard him.
And it was this idea of the power of sleep and unlocking all of this stuff at night, which is why I guess we ultimately have the phrase
sleep on it, right?
Yeah.
This is true. Certainly when you sleep, if you look at the scan of the brain, for instance, the patterns you've been using most during that day will be in some way recapitulated. So it affects your memory. It's both good and bad. If you've got something that you've been playing wrong, for instance, on the cello, your sleep will actually reinforce those erroneous brain patterns, and you'll have to unlearn that and then correct it. But yeah, sleep's really important for brain health.
So then the connection to music.
So music is one of those activities that integrates multiple parts of your brain. If you think about what you have to do, particularly when playing a piece of music, you've got to read the music, that's a visual skill. You've got to translate that into a series of motor actions while simultaneously hearing the goal of that music output. So you've got your auditory stream, you've got your motor cortex, all of those get integrated. Turns out there's one place in the brain where that integration occurs, it's called the parietal lobe. It's the same place where we create our sense of self, so our image of what our body is and where we are in space. If you're an expert cellist and you pick up your cello and you start playing, part of your sense of self now includes that cello. So if someone touches the cello, what you'll see is that parts of your brain normally activated by them touching your hand, let's say, will light up. You will actually experience that cello as part of yourself.
So you had mentioned the part of the brain that has the goal. So the goal is in there?
There are two different parts of the brain you're looking at. The parietal lobe, which is the mid-back of the brain if you're looking from the top, is where you integrate who you are, all the sensory information coming in, where you are in space. Your frontal lobe sends a bunch of input to and from there, which is the goal-directed part of that. So if I want to pick up a coffee mug, my motor actions and my sensory information will get integrated in my parietal lobe, but my frontal lobe will be the place that says, huh, I feel like some coffee right now. What should I do to execute that action? And then sends the instruction, here's the goal, go pick up that coffee mug.
Okay, so it's not like knowing what the music should sound like and then having your body do that.
It is both. And one of the things you learn that's really entertaining and frustrating sometimes about the brain is that the information available to your unconscious brain is different and greater than the information available to your conscious brain.
So let me ask you this question, because I just thought of it, and I think it's interesting, and if it's stupid, we can move on to other things. But like karaoke.
Yes.
I mean, isn't that what that's based on? Like, we know what it should sound like, and yet we can't pull it off.
And you can try, but yes, you don't have the skills necessarily. Nonetheless, you're quite correct. You've got a goal, you've got a set of sounds you want to try to produce, and you'll if you're a karaoke person, you'll realize you put yourself in the mindset of that singer. There's a whole specialized system we have in the brain. You may have heard of mirror neurons.
Yeah.
That help you understand why somebody else is doing what they're doing and allow you to try to imitate that. So, yeah, it's part of the same.
So when it comes to this idea of the music and the mind, I like the subtitle because it's the lifelong benefits. So how do we enjoy those lifelong benefits?
If you look at the brains of musicians, folks who've played, you know, at an expert level, who put a lot of time into practice, you'll see that their experience of music is very different to that of, you know, someone like myself, who is a rank amateur, both on the terms of conscious and unconscious level, but particularly the unconscious. So when, you know, Margaret hears a piece of cello music, her motor cortex will light up. The series of actions that she would need to execute in order for her to play that piece of cello music will actually be activated because that motor program exists in there and it's already linked to here's the sound, here's what the music would look like on the page. So a musician's experience of that piece of music is much deeper. It activates many more brain components. One of the consequences of that is that the connectivity across the brain is preserved and strengthened, and that extends to working memory, it extends to spatial navigation, it extends to ability to speed, process language, and appropriately formulate new thoughts. So it's not just music that you're getting an improved boost to. That loss of connectivity is one of the key things that you would see with conditions like, say, Alzheimer's disease. You lose the ability to accurately connect different parts of the brain. And so playing music, because you've had the long-term strengthening of multiple connections, can actually help to retard and prevent the cognitive decline you see with aging and other conditions.
Is when we see children especially excel in music, is that what you are born with, or do you gain that? How does that work?
So that's one of a really good question, actually. Is it that you have a brain that's predisposed to be good at playing music and therefore you do? Or is it that you are made to play music and therefore your brain creates that way? The answer is almost certainly both, but it does mean it's really hard to conduct well-controlled research. We can't, you know, take a bunch of rats and make them play the cello. That wouldn't work well.
No.
And we can't.
And who'd buy tickets for that?
Oh, I would absolutely buy tickets
would?
For that.
All right.
And we can't
a
ethically,
rat quartet. Go
you know,
ahead.
Randomly assign kindergarten students and say, okay, U20, you're going to play the cello. U20, you're going to play the flute. U20, you're just going to do Xbox. And see what the consequences are. So we don't have that well-controlled data. It's hard to tell which came first, the musical brain or the musical skill.
I remember in reading that book, and this word just came to me, and I don't know how it fits in here, but elasticity mm-hmm. of the brain. I mean, does that figure into this?
If I can just check, I suspect you mean plasticity.
Sure.
So neuroplasticity.
if that makes me sound smarter, go with it.
It does. And one of the scary things is, this is actually a true fact, if you use an explanation for something and put some neuroscience words in, people believe you.
Sure. Yeah,
anyway, all right. Neuroplasticity, the ability to change how our brain connects and adapts and stores information. The motor cortex and that parietal lobe, that sense of self, are remarkably plastic. There's a great experiment called the rubber hand illusion, where by putting a rubber hand on the desk in front of someone, hiding their own hand, and then touching both with a paintbrush, what your brain is now seeing is a visual input of a paintbrush touching this rubber hand, and the sensory input of themselves being touched. Within a couple of minutes, you integrate that rubber hand into your sense of self. So if someone comes along and surprisingly whacks it with a hammer, you flinch as though it was your hand. The ability to change our sense of self, to include, for instance, a cello in that sense of self, is remarkably adaptable and rapid. So, yes, plasticity is the ability to change how we put connections between different things within the brain. And playing music enhances the ability to do that.
Let us talk for a moment about the Bach Cello Suites workshop and how this came about and what ultimately the mission of the group is, because you do some wonderful work over a year's time.
Well, this summer is going to be our fifth workshop, which sort of stuns us that it's actually been that long, because it seemed like it started out as just kind of a pipe dream. And we have had these five workshops, and we've had people come from all over the country. For our workshop this summer, which is July 28th through August 3rd, we have so far 25 people registered coming from everywhere, a lot of returnees and some new people. We will have a public concert on the final Friday of that workshop. If people visit our website, they can find out about that. But people have, the people who keep coming back just find it to be very rewarding for them to have an opportunity to work with others on something that they, it's a, the cello work suites are solo pieces, and they work on them alone, you know, during the year. And this is one time to come together and work with others on it and sort of share their struggles and their successes.
What is it about Bach in particular that, that lends itself to these types of workshops?
Well, you might be aware that Yo-Yo Ma is now touring his, I think, fourth recording of the suites.
Yeah.
People's interpretation of it seems to change over time, the longer they play them. So it's not just the skills, which is, you know, huge, but it's also the interpretation, the expression. And that's something that people just grow with over their lifetimes. So it's almost endless, you know. Each suite was written at a different time, and Bach was going through different things, and people in our workshop are going through a lot of different things, and they just find it a great solace to work with others on this.
You could think of this perhaps as being a bit like Shakespeare. You know, the words of Shakespeare don't change, but people's interpretation and the way they perform each play will change. A musician's brain is remarkably good at processing language rapidly, and music definitely is a language. And you'll see that it's the interpretation and the link to your memories, how you think about this piece, the emotions it conveys, that will vary a little across individual musicians.
Is that why different orchestras have a different sound?
That's part of it.
I mean, one of the reasons. Anyway.
Yeah. You know, you when you join a group and you play with a group, there is a collective emergent property of we're all going to interpret this certain way. And those same mirror neurons I mentioned a moment ago, you'll see your colleagues playing in a particular manner with a particular set of intonations and emotions, and that will influence how you play yourself.
When we talk about your talk, Music and the Mind, the lifelong benefits of music, we can get this from listening as well as playing?
You can, but it's not as deep. So if I sit there and I listen to a flautist, let's say, it will not activate a motor program. I have no idea how to play the flute. It will not activate the same sense of connection to that music in the language centers. I don't have the expertise or the practice to have that same level of deep processing. And it's the depth of processing that really enhances both your learning and your ability to learn other stuff in the future.
That ability to learn other stuff in the future, that seems endless then.
Oh, it absolutely is. One of the things I tell my students over and over again is that just passively reading or highlighting a book is not going to cut it. You want to write things out. And you want to write things out longhand because we have a deeper representation when you form an A with your hand writing a pen than just hitting a key on a keyboard. And so it's the same thing. You want to be more deeply engaging with the material, whether it's music or the neuroscience in my classes or a book you're reading. If it's something that you find particularly interesting and you want to learn it, write that piece out. It'll be stored much more rapidly and much more completely.
How did the library get involved with music and Bach? Just you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically. Well, also, the person who's the head of adult services there, Maria Buell, she's a flute player in mm-hmm. the Del Mar Community Orchestra. And there's a lot of crossover between some of these orchestras, like the Del Mar Community Orchestra. My husband, Mark, right now is playing with the Albany Area Senior Orchestra, which has people of all ages, mostly retired. And so I when I got interested in doing having somebody come and talk about this topic, I naturally went to the Gilderland Library and talked to Maria and said, you know, could we co-sponsor this? And she was eager to do it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
A wonderful combination. What a fascinating subject, and it's sure to be a fascinating program that will be happening at the library tomorrow night, Wednesday night, March 20th at 7 p.m. at the Gilderland Public Library. It is going to feature UAlbany neuroscientist Dr. Ewan McNay. The name of the program, Music and the Mind, the Lifelong Benefits of Music for the Brain. It is a multimedia presentation, so it'll be very cool to see that. If you want to find out more information about the event, as well as the Bach Cello Workshop and the great work that they do in their season from July 28th through August 3rd, plus the public concert, you can go to bachcelloworkshop.org. Bach Cello Workshop.
Bach Cello Suites Workshop.
bachcellosuitesworkshop.org. I forgot a word. bachcellosuitesworkshop.org. And Margaret Lanoux and Dr. McKay, I thank you very much for being McNay, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you both, and have a beautiful program tomorrow night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.